How do you see the world today in terms of the challenges facing us?
Well, I think we are at the point where the immovable object is starting to look into the eyes of the irresistible force. The immovable object is the system which thinks it's immovable, but it isn't. And it's increasingly coming, if you like, face to face with the irresistible force, which is irresistible. And that's this energetic awareness, consciousness change that is awakening people to their own slavery. And, you know, my experience anyway, when I was talking earlier about the people in the dark suit professions, as I call them, beginning to question their lives and question their perceptions and question what life's all about, that is what I called years ago the truth vibrations. It's this reevaluation going on, and this reevaluation, although they might not use these words, it is an evaluation that leads them to the conclusion that they are actually a slave. And it's that, like I say, the most important thing that we can first of all conclude before we're ever going to do anything about it. And so we're at the point now where this system of control, which is centrally controlled and centrally dictated, has been moving on and on and on and on through history, and grasping more and more power. It's been grasping more and more power at the center in all areas of our lives. And when you think about a few controlling the many, an absolute prerequisite to that is to centralize decision making, centralize power, because the more points of decision making there are, the less control any few at the center are going to have over those decisions. And what we've seen throughout history, and I would strongly contend that there has been a force and still is behind this throughout history, where people have, you know, been born and died, and generations have come and generations have gone. I would contend very strongly that there is a common force and theme through all this, which has been directing human society very clearly closer and closer to total control. And to do that, they have to centralize power. So we went from a tribal situation, and when the people in the tribe were making decisions about the tribe. And then the tribes came together, or lots of them came together, into what we call nations. Now a few people at the center of the nation are dictating to all the former tribes. And now we're in, certainly in Europe, but worldwide too, with unions and so-called trade agreements, we are bringing those nations together under centralized dictatorship. I mean, the European Union is a classic example of that, where a few dark suits in Brussels are in effect dictating to the whole of Europe. Dark suits in Brussels who are bureaucrats and administrators, and dark suits elsewhere in Frankfurt that run and control the European Central Bank. And so if you look at the word globalization, that is just a word to describe this process of incessant centralization of control and power that I've been talking about, that has spanned the generations. And so now, whether it's corporations, whether it's banks, whether it's governments, militaries increasingly with NATO and such like, more and more we've got the centralization of control over every area of our lives, and it's becoming more and more centralized by the day through these trade agreements, which are giving more power to corporations than governments that are supposed to represent the people. So this has been going on. What's also happened is we've had more and more centralization of control in law enforcement at its various levels, be it police or be it the military. And so this control system, with the wealth and control going into fewer and fewer hands, and that status quo being held together and protected by law enforcement that's ever more draconian, has been a process that has been coldly calculated that you can follow through through the generations to present day, getting more and more centralized and more and more centralized power all the time. And we have reached a point now where the irresistible force is starting to awaken people. And never before, certainly in known human history, have more, still not anywhere near enough yet, but never in known human history, in my view, have, and I think it's obvious anyway, have as many people as there are today started to see the game, starting to see what's happening, and starting to see the techniques of manipulation and perception manipulation that manipulate humanity to accept changes that lead on this direction that I'm talking about. And that's what I mean by the irresistible force coming face to face with the immovable object, which isn't immovable, just thinks it is. And so we're at this big fork in the road where people have the choice between slavery and freedom, between going on the way that we have been, going on along this process that I'm talking about, into what is planned by these very strange people to be something that George Orwell would have said about, I didn't realize it would be this extreme. Or we can awaken not just to the nature of what is happening and why, but most important, we can awaken to the true nature of who we are, which is consciousness. One of the most important parts of this, what I call perception deception, is to manipulate people and program people to perceive everything only through the five senses. The five senses are the great illusion. And if people experience and perceive the world only through the five senses, the system's got them. Because in the books over the years and in the talks that I've done, I've never talked about the conspiracy to enslave humanity without talking about the nature of reality and the nature of who we are. Because unless you talk about both, there is a massive imbalance, because one is an expression of the other. It's the ignorance of the nature of reality and the ignorance of the true nature of self that has allowed the slavery to happen. And where we are enslaved is we're enslaved in the prison of the five senses. People should look at this process that I talked about of so-called education. They should look at the media. They should even look at science, what passes for it, and ask themselves why, when we are supposedly at the cutting edge of human awareness and capable of this so-called amazing technology, actually it's the Stone Age really, but so-called amazing technology, why is it that if you stopped people almost anywhere in the world and said, who are you and where do you come from, they would probably, most of them, give you their name and tell you where they live? Others might tell you a tale related to the religion they follow. But if they follow mainstream science, they might say, I'm just a cosmic accident, and after me 70 years, I disappear into non-existence. What I'm saying here is, why is it that the nature of reality is virtually not discussed in the schools, virtually not discussed in the media? I mean, look at all the channels there are now, television channels all over the world. You go to America, you can flip through for an hour and still not run out of them. And you see programs and channels for virtually everything you can think of. But how rarely do you ever see any exploration of the nature of reality beyond the mainstream scientific version of reality? And yet, when you take the trouble, take the choice to delve into the evidence that exists, even in the more open-minded end of mainstream science, quantum physics and such like, you realize that this so-called physical solid reality is an illusion. I've been saying for years that this world that we perceive as a solid physical world actually only exists when we decode it into existence. And people have looked at me and thought, you're mad. And yet, very recently, just a few weeks ago, there was a mainstream science study which concluded, in their way of describing it, that the world that we see only exists when we look at it. When we're not looking at it, it's in a different form to that solid world that we see when we're not where we are looking at it. And the word I've used over the years is not when we look at it, but when we decode it, and it's our attention that decodes it. So you say to people, okay, this is a real world, right? Yeah. So it's solid. Yeah, of course it is. Look, solid.
Yeah.
And then you say, well, quantum physics has actually shown that it's not, because there is no physical. It's an illusion. Not only that, the human visual perception range is so tiny, what we call visible light, it's almost laughable. We are living apparently in a solid world that provably can't be solid, and we're seeing a sliver of frequency that we can decode into what we perceive as a physical world. It's actually holographic, illusory physical. And so I say then again to people, here you are in a world that seems solid but isn't. So I would say there's a few questions to ask there for a start.
Yeah.
And the world that you think you are seeing, the world in which you think you are seeing everything in the space you appear to be observing, is a frequency range so tiny it's hysterical. Mainstream science says that the electromagnetic spectrum is 0.005% of what they believe to exist in the universe, in mass and energy and all that stuff. And some say it's a bit more, but not much. And visible light, which is all that we can actually perceive as this reality we see, is a fraction of the 0.005%. So let's look at that, and let's be just a little bit humble and a little bit sensible, and ask ourselves, How can we be so sure that our perceptions that we've grown up with of self, of life, of reality, of everything, have unshakable validity and unquestionable validity when the world you experience as solid isn't solid, and the amount of reality that you can actually see and perceive is so ridiculously small? I mean, for a start, I mean, you know, if that's the real world, well, it ain't very real to me.
No.
So,
no.
Again, it's an extraordinary part of this perception program that, given all these things, that people can still be so certain and so immovable that what they believe and perceive, which is what they have been programmed to perceive and believe by this process of what we call life, how they can be so certain and immovable about it is ridiculous from anyone looking on. So the question is, why does almost everyone do it? Why? Because it's a program. Why does this computer in front of me now respond when I press enter in the way I know it's going to respond? If I put data into it and I press enter, I know before I do how it's going to respond. Why? Because it's programmed to do so. And when I observe the world, it doesn't matter, almost doesn't matter what culture, what race, what background. If you put the data in, i.e. you put people in a certain situation, you can pretty much press enter and you're going to know how they're going to respond. And it's wherever I look, whether it's human response, human emotional response, whether it's this process of cradle to grave, this cradle to grave sequence I talked about earlier, whether it's cycles, whether it's the cycles of the animal world or the cycles of species, they're all programs. And this then comes to something else. When you look at the way animals live and the way humans live, they're basically the same.